All right, I've started recording. We're just going to kick this off. This is a Discord conversation between me and Caleb. And Caleb, you're pretty new to the server. I think you've only been here for about a week now, I think.
Yeah, it's like 3 days, maybe 3 days, 4 days.
And I remember you reaching out to me by email. Saying that, well, at least via Paul, saying that you'd been watching these rando videos we're making, and you attached some writing of your own, and I've been reading through that, and I think it's very interesting. Do you mind if I read some of it? It's fine if it's no. That's perfectly fine.
Let's wait on that.
No problem.
I guess, and I have some reasonings with that, but...
No issue. That's why I ask. You're perfectly within your rights to say no. I'll just say that I like what you're writing.
Word. I appreciate that.
Some things strike me. I can hear and there see the influences of at least Aurelius. And perhaps some Epictetus. But
word.
I'm just wondering... Who's the person who writes this? Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
What specifically do you are you?
I'm kind of curious because you, without going into details, you write a mixture between rhyme and prose.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, let's say you sit down and write, what kind of mood are you in? What makes you write these things? What prompts that?
So it's a pretty it's kind of a constant stream kind of thing that I am going to throughout the day. So at different points, like there'll be an artistic kind of kick. And so I'll be working on this song and I'll think, wow, that, you know, I should include this. But then other times I'll be watching some lecture and some thought, something that's said will trigger something. And it's kind of a problem actually, but I'll just completely stop listening and I'll just dive down this thought process of thinking about this one thing they said, and it leads me to some, conclusion or some thought, that some new perspective that I have not had, or some lesson or something like that. And so I'll just begin trying to convey it in a way that makes sense to people, or that could make sense to people. And then it becomes what it is. Sometimes that's a single sentence and sometimes that's a big old chunk. But I write a couple different waves as far as like writing genres go. And I just kind of let them, come in sets and do what they're going to do.
Have you been doing that for a long time?
This type of endeavor is recent. But since, I don't know, 2010, when I was like 17, I first started writing, tried to write just like a guitar, you know, song, lyrics, and it was painful. It was absolutely atrocious. And it frustrated me because I wanted to have that artistic, venue, I guess. But then sometime after that, my friend who was a senior got me into freestyle rapping, kind of forced me into it, peer pressured me into it, and I sucked at first. But then tried it again and it was a little bit better. Tried it again, and we were just having fun in his car while we were driving to football or something. But after a bit, it became like an actual thing. I was getting better at it, and I was able to freestyle for a couple minutes. And then the writing side of things clicked, and I started writing songs, and that changed everything. Definitely changed my entire life. I'd never had something that I could get so caught up in and express myself so not clearly, I guess, because with rap stuff can be very hidden. But you have enough time to say everything. It's where with singing and whatnot, it's more melodic. To where with rap, I can fit in everything that's on my mind. And so, yeah, that just progressed over the years and was just kind of my something I've pursued off and on. But it's also just like how I keep my sanity and how I try to digest things, and yeah. So yeah, from there it's mostly from music, and then in recent years it's developed more as I've been more intentional with it. It's developed more into a more academic kind of thing, I guess, even though it's not.
So basically, it's these little things that you don't expect. Some guy who, or a friend actually, who, well, pressured you to try out this new thing, change your entire life. There's somebody at my door, and I don't know what they want, so I'm going to ignore them and hope they go away. So in your writing, I sometimes see references to your faith, and I wonder, like, do you come from a religious family, or did you have to develop
Oh
this,
yeah.
or?
My religious journey has definitely been an interesting one. I was raised in a Christian home. Grew up in a fellowship church. Non-denominational, quote unquote, but reformed. Went to a Christian school. That was like a fundamental Baptist Christian school,
What is
and did
that? What does
that.
that mean for somebody who's not from the States? What does it mean to go to a fundamental Baptist school? Because I've never heard of that.
It's just very well. So in certain ways, like it's lax because it's like West Coast. I don't know, West Coast, we just kind of do stuff a little more relaxed, like, I guess. But with fundamental Baptist kind structures, there tends to be legalism and in my opinion, like a focus, like a zoning in, a zooming in on like rules and regulations, and that side of like morality of like doing the right thing because that's the rules, and then just having very, just some strict beliefs that they had. That I don't necessarily hold now. But it was a very, very great academic school as well, though. I got a great education that I pissed away for sure, but because I was a rebel. But I've learned a ton, and yeah. Well, I mean, we'll probably get to that later.
What did you feel you needed to rebel against?
Everything.
Everything. Oh boy.
It was, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of naturally a rebel, so then when I got into the that stage of teen rebellion and naive foolishness, or I guess just kind of selfishness, that yeah, it had its effects on my life, but it all came around and worked for the good as well, though. So,
So you rebelled your way through Baptist school.
yeah, until yeah. So, okay. Well, I'll just say real quick with like grade school, like I wanted to be like a pastor. Like
Really? A
in
rebel
like first or
pastor.
second grade. In first or second grade, I for like a show and tell or some type of like talent show thing, I decided to give a sermon on some. I have no idea what it was or how bad it was, but that was like I just felt that way. And my dad is an elder in our church, and has been my entire life. And it's just that our church was a very big part of my life, and it's always fascinated me. So yeah, I think even as a little guy, I was somewhat in tune to existential stuff and needing to find something. But so as I got into high school, I started to that rebellion kind started to really rise up, and I started, making dumb youngster decisions, and getting into stuff. But at the same time, the whole fundamental Baptist stuff I was talking about really started to get at me, because now we're in high school, and so it's a different thing. There's less, you can have less authority over me as I was in, middle school or grade school. I'm becoming conscious now, so I'm gonna buck back. And so with religion, as far as faith goes, I there just started to be all these questions that weren't being answered, and there was a lot of like, if this is it, I don't want any of this. Just with that, the way that people were, the Christians, what they were like. And there's a church in the area that I'm not going to name, but that's, somewhat substantial, and some stuff with that definitely burned me as well. Just gave me a bad taste. And so, yeah, during high school, it just kind of slowly more and more became like a, like, nah, this isn't it. Like, I don't
Did that
know what I
affect
believe, but.
that, how did that affect your relationship with your dad, given that you said he's an elder in the church?
Yeah, so, I mean, my two brothers and my mom and my dad are all believers, and at that point, it was kind of a package deal because like there's that side of things, but then also like started sneaking out to go to parties and started, was smoking cigs and got into smoking weed, and yeah, like it was just all of that as well was creating this lower T truth in my head, that I'm the black sheep of the family, and no one's gonna understand me. No one's gonna get it. If they actually knew, no one would get it. And so I just started slowly pushing myself further and further away from all of them. just became very isolated, and like I'd still be around here and there. I still lived at home, was still in high school, but all my time was spending with friends. And then, yeah, it got worse and worse till like 2 years after high school, or a year and a half after high school is when all that changed, but we'll get to that at some point.
Did you have friends around that time? Because you're saying you're starting to pull away, but did you have
Yeah,
people around you?
so halfway through my senior year, yeah, like I before that, at first 3 years of high school, I always hung out with seniors every year. Like I just gravitated towards, I don't know, more mature kind. So I was kind of the little brother of all these different groups. And so I had that, but that didn't necessarily help anything. Because they were at a more extreme level of their rebellion. And so I kind of got that early. And so like the partying stuff just kind of quickened a lot faster than it would have. But I did learn a lot. But then my senior year, which I could talk about for a long time anyway. A lot of stuff went down, and I had to leave that high school, that Christian high school, or else I would have gotten kicked out. And so, and I wanted to go. I wanted to get out of being raised in a school that is 300 people, and everyone, your brothers have come through, and they've established this legacy. It's kind of hard to walk in that kind of thing and do it any
Right.
justice.
You had the feeling there were these expectations you had to kind of fulfill.
Yeah, and people had me had an image for me already. Like everything was already very decided there. I'd been around there for a long time, and so there was just like, oh yeah, we know Caleb, or we know what he's about or who he is deep down, and people just didn't like the way I am. I'm a little bit of a mystery in that way, and so like I'm not going to put all my cards on the table. You're not going to know what all I'm thinking, and so that kind of stuff just got at me more and more in my individualism. And then you mix in getting in trouble with the school and whatnot, and having to go. So I transferred to public school halfway through my senior year. Transferred to North Medford, and still hard to look at or hard to judge. But I went from like a crazy strict school to like no one cares. Like do what you want, to an extent. I mean, obviously, it's not like a crazy place, but in comparison, like I had ultimate freedom, and so with the friends that I started making there, and I had been making them before, and it's the reason I transferred to North as well. We were like a crew, and we partied together, and so that like peer influence was definitely, in regards to this kind of stuff, was not good at all. That was a detriment to my journey at that point. Birds of a feather kind of thing.
Yeah, there were even less constraints than before.
Yeah, and then you take, yeah, at least, I don't know, like, and then everyone else is, they also have this freedom, and they've had this freedom, and so they live this totally different way. And it was, super enticing, and yeah, so senior year, towards the end of it, I was selling weed and stuff. And so like if I showed up late in the morning to school, they had these gates around it. They would lock the gates like 5, 10 minutes after the bell to force you to go through the office, which was like a safety thing for the students, for us. But it was also a like to make sure that we go through the office to get in trouble before we go back to class, so we don't just sneak in to our class. And so I would like wait there, see if anyone would come by to open the gate. And a lot of times if no one came, I'd just be like, all right, and go down the street to Spring Park and post up to make some money for the day.
Right. But at that point in
So
your
that
life, that just seemed what you did.
well, that was like the it was just the yeah, there was no point to this high school thing. Like I was just, in a very strange place in a clouded place. Yeah, I mean, I had more to finish out the rest of the senior year. I had more than enough credits to graduate. I had like 5 more credits than I needed, but I had, stopped going to certain classes and stuff, and had just bailed so much that, like, I wasn't gonna walk. And then in summer school, some crap happened as well, and so I was just like, you know what? Nope, screw this. Like, I'm done with this. And just, bailed. So as far as my education goes, like I got a great education. I just squandered it, and have had to, in recent years, learn a lot and teach myself how to learn, so that I can try to keep up with all this kind of stuff.
Would you say that experience has made you more self-aware? Because from your writings, you definitely appear to be.
Yeah, most definitely. And that's why I look at like all this stuff. I am very, very, I don't know, it makes it, I see the fruit of it, of all of it, like stuff's unfortunate. Like I wish I hadn't had to go through a lot of different things. Yeah, I don't know. It's certain ways it forced me to be self-aware. But I see just how all of it, worked together to, because I sucked before. Before the rebellion happened and stuff, like I was just a like I was a great kid, probably would have loved me, but I was just very sheltered and very, not very sheltered, because it wasn't like homeschool. Not not to rag on anyone that's homeschooled. There's just if I saw a homeless person walking on the other that's coming up, I would, put my head down or avoid somehow. Or if I like, it was just life was very clean and not chaotic and not nuanced and not, like,
Yeah, you didn't have to face it entirely.
and then I was homeless, the year after high school or whatever. And so I just, it's a blessing. Like my crap, my foolish years, I am very grateful for as well, because I would not be me. And I hate that it took me being a donkey to get here. And that's just, like I'm not there even close, but just to get this progress. It took that stupid journey, but it took that, so I can't.
So wait a second. You're saying okay. So you ended up graduating, but you became homeless. Did I miss
No,
something? Or
I did not graduate.
Then I misunderstood you because you said you had like all these extra credits and you basically just.
So you have to, in high school, like one side of passing, of graduating, is having a certain amount of credits. And then the other side of it is, as far as the school goes, because I think that's more of like a state or national thing, that you have to have a certain amount of credits going into, or to account for a high school diploma, which Cascades was more than North. The private school I went to before, it was higher. But you also have to pass the your senior year classes, like you have to finish, get a math credit. Even if you have enough credits, you still have to get a math credit your senior year. A and so that side of things I failed on, because with stopping going, or with just, kind of freaking off,
I get
it,
it.
yeah.
So what happened after that?
So the friends I talked about, I mean, I just started to party a lot more, and I was working, off and on, selling weed off and on. With all those friends, the crew, it started to get kind of out of hand. Because we were trying to figure out, and I had some dreams with the group of like how to really turn it into something, something that could make all of our dreams come true, by working together and by collectively making one of our dreams come true. And yeah, that's a whole thing. But it as it became kind of business minded, and as we wanted to fund certain things like recording equipment for a studio, or funds for some clothing stuff, getting that going, or just different stuff, like where we were at, like we were rascals. And so it's, the answer was like, all right, let's get to selling and let's get this money. And then we can go legit and do this thing. And so, we all just kind of more leaned into it, and me and my friends started growing, and other people started selling harder stuff, and it just kind of, it, I don't, it turned into this thing that it wasn't before. Like it was just a group of friends before. And then, yeah, like I could see in some ways, like how gangs start. Like it's very subtle, that descent. And even with like parties and stuff, like it was like a, the crew names is, oh, the crew, the Get Ups here, or like F the Get Up. Like whoever doesn't like our crew, like, oh, F that, like screw those guys. And then there'd be like confrontation from them. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, what are you guys doing? Like, who cares if he hates our group? Like, what are you? Yeah, so it just kind of barreled out of control in that way. I mean, not like ridiculously, but I just saw where it was going. And I was also in an older group as well, that I was kind of like a little brother of, and they, yeah, that was an equally not great influence. Some of them definitely were, but for the most part, that was where, most drug crazy partying stuff got introduced. Just 'cause I was like 18 and they were all like 21, 22. And so it allowed for that kind of stuff. And that was like my introduction to more mysticism kind of stuff and new age kind of stuff, hippie woo kind of stuff. Yeah. So getting back on track, sorry.
That's fine.
After my senior year, as far as like faith goes, I was pretty much with my transfer to North. Like I wasn't going to church or anything with my family. And it was established that I was not really a believer and was trying to figure this stuff out and was failing at doing so. And then, after senior year is done, I was done with faith. And just kind of thought that Christianity was a load of crap. And then that November, my friend Kiana passed away tragically and out of nowhere. And it changed everything. Like as far as what I was just talking about, like it decided like, okay, I don't care if this Christian stuff is right or not. If this is the God, I want nothing to do with this, you know? And just the human reaction to death and being a very emotional person personally, and I'd never experienced anything like that before. You know, not even with family or anything really, let alone a peer, and a close one at that. And so that was, that also led me into some mysticism and stuff as well. To try to deal with that.
Right. You didn't go into resentful atheism.
Yeah, well, so the thing with that, like I've always been some form of like agnostic or I guess theist, because I mean, I'm just looking out my window right now and I see so many things that I could say. There's two birds that are sitting on this light pole, and their intricacy of them to fly and to connect with each other and to seasonal patterns, and or if we were talking face to face, you know, looking at your eyes and just analyze like stuff like that, that it makes it very hard for me to just say, it happened. Like this all just happened. Like it's very hard for me to, not that it's very hard, I don't see it that way.
Right. So the Christianity was incompatible with suffering, but you also weren't.
And it was, yeah, I felt like it was a not necessarily, like, it's not tied to a God existing is not tied to Christianity being right, necessarily. You know what I mean? I was like, well, this source exists. What you guys got going is a crock of crap, though, as far as I can see, as far as you have shown me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was that more. And so, yeah, kind of just went through a process of like trying to figure out what I believed and what truth was. And it was all, you know, somewhat misguided because I was young and was, you know, partying a bunch and whatnot, but I've always been introspective and I don't care about a lot of things a lot of people do. If I think something is important, I don't care if it seems stupid to other people. I'm gonna figure it out, or I'm gonna lean into it and see where it leads me. Yeah, from that point, it led to, I a lot of different new age and mysticism kind of mystic kind of things. Just trying to find any answers, but also just trying to find adventure as well and a good time. So there was some selfish anti-seeking going on with the seeking, if that makes any sense.
No, what do you mean by that?
Like I was doing things that numbed me and blinded me to any reality, while I was claiming to be searching and seeking. So it was like this anti-form of it as I was seeking. So I was like negating the process because of these other things that I was doing. Like I couldn't have, I don't know.
Sounds like you were spinning your wheels a bit.
I was biting myself and shooting myself in the foot, as I was trying to run a marathon or something. I don't know.
But
But,
were you aware of that at that point?
oh no. No. That's the, so I started to, it's hard to, at a certain point, we'll have to talk about, sometime, not today. I don't want to tell all my stories today, all my good ones. But the love story, I'll have to tell you that sometime.
Oh, we're into chapters now.
Oh, there's some, there's a couple mixed in there that it's hard to tell, like my testimony without telling the love story, without telling the art story. So we'll have to do some episodes or something.
Okay, but I still don't know how you became homeless.
So, ended up back at my parents' house after high school. And was basically just a failure as far as reality was concerned. It was just selling drugs and doing manual labor as well, off and on, switching between those. At a certain point, and this is right after senior year, but at a certain point, I had stopped working and was just selling. And it was taking care of me. And so my dad finally came to a point of like, hey, and he knew, they knew, but he's like, hey, you're not working and you're not going to school. Well, first of all, you're not going to school, you're not going to college and stuff. And my rules are that you need to be working. And you're not working and you still have money. And like you're still he's basically saying, like, I know you're selling weed. Like I know you're doing this, and you can't be doing that while
Right,
you
right.
live under my roof. And I totally understood that. Like it was not like a fight at all. It was a very like, yeah, I get that 100%. Like I can't expect you to accept this. Like I'm obviously not living the life that you condone. So like, word, I'm gone. Because he was like, you can't live here if that's what you're doing. Like you have to switch up to, I need you to change your life to going to school or working if you're gonna be here. And I was just like, well, I'm not willing to do that, so we're at an impasse here, so I understand that you have to kick me out.
Yeah,
And
this wasn't a door slamming leave the house from what I hear.
no, like it was very like just yeah, this is on from my side, you know, definitely. I'm sure there was a lot more heartbreak in it for my dad, but to me it
Right.
was just kind of like, yeah, I mean, yeah, this is the nature of things, so I totally get that, and I'll go willingly. So then I lived, and this is this is 2012, and I lived in my car for a little bit, a little Bimmer. Yeah, that sucked. That was not fun. And then I just started crashing on friends' couches, and there's a whole nother story of my arrest. But ended up at my friends, a couple friends had an apartment, and so I was, and they were just lawless guys. So I was living at their apartment and living the life. And that was where the homelessness ended. Sorry, what was that?
Yeah, we got William, who should probably mute himself.
Oh, I was just making sure no one was asking a question.
So.
Yeah, so to
Over at friends, probably paying your rent and weed.
Well, I'm just trying to this is one of those convergences of multiple stories, so I'm trying to figure out how to best. So when the love story gets told, the girl, the one, I hadn't seen her at this point. We had dated my senior year, going into my senior year, and then broke up after that. And I had not seen her in 2 years. That's all I'll say to not make this a 20-hour conversation. And so I hadn't seen her in 2 years, hadn't talked to her, had thought about her all the time, and no one else really stacked up to her. Not really. No one stacked up to her. And then as I'm living at my friend's apartment and just living in filth, she messages me 2 years, and she messages me and lets me know that she was in town. She lived across the state. We had a long distance relationship via Young Life camp meeting and stuff like that. Yeah, she messaged me and let me know that she was in town saying bye to her other friend before she moved to Hawaii for a YWAM, Youth with a Mission, DTS and stuff, and asked if we could catch up. And I'm like, you know, like in the shit still. Like I'm my worst self.
Yeah,
And
you're in no position to be any decent to a girl.
yeah, especially the dream. Like especially the one that deserves my best.
Right.
And it made that fact made it just very click of like, dude, like looking around at my life and my decision making, and not necessarily like my current state, but like how it got there and what I was doing, you know, like meta wise, what I was doing in this journey and where I was at. And I was just like, God, dude, you are an idiot. Like, I can't, what are you? So that shifted a lot of things. And then that same day, that same day, all those guys got kicked out of their apartment. That was the day that they had to move out of their apartment. And some stuff went down in the complex, and so people had to move out. I think they were selling it or something. But So a couple of the guys had found, God, it's so hard not to tell every story. A couple of the guys had found some friends who had just returned up north to college in Corvallis. And so their house was empty. And so they gave my two friends permission to stay there because they hadn't yet found a place to live after getting kicked out of their apartment. While the other two had family ties to fall back on.
And
And
you went along.
well, okay, so it's interesting. So just to say that first, so that is also context of this situation. So I go, and as they're packing stuff, I go and I meet with the girl, the dream. And the whole time, I mean, it was amazing to see her, but the whole time I'm just like BSing and like, oh yeah, life's great. I'm doing fantastic. Like, couldn't be better. Just nailing it in life, you know, that kind of. And she's just wanting, just dying for honesty and to understand what happened before. And so, yeah, so that all goes on. And after that conversation, I call my parents. And I was just like, I am so sorry. Like I've been the worst. I need to change stuff up. And then my dad's like, all right, come over, let's talk.
So the girl
And
was a
so,
mirror to you in that regard.
yeah. And so, got to, yeah, apologize to my mom and my dad about what. Who I had been for, you know, years at that point. Yeah, they're like, I mean, yeah, you can, like, if you actually are changing, then you can definitely stay here for a time till you figure yourself out. And I was like, awesome, thank you, I appreciate that a ton. And went back to meet up with my friends and gave them a ride from the apartment to like helping them because the two that didn't have a place to land also didn't have a vehicle. And so I was, you know, helping get them around. And the house that they are got permission to stay at from their friends is like in the process of being foreclosed. And it's like at the very beginning of the process. So it's got like a month or so, but like I'm sure it's established within the neighborhood that this is, you know, about to be a foreclosure and that they just saw the people moving out and all this stuff. And so I helped them unload and stuff. And then, oh, and at that point I went home and talked to my mom and my dad. And then picked my one friend up and brought him back to the house, to the house he's staying at. And the other one had gone to a different town to party that night. And in the house, you know, there's no like there's a bunch of the people's stuff was still there. My friend's family stuff was still there, but they hadn't come in to pack up before it foreclosed, I guess. But there was no like furniture or anything, so it looked, you know, a little dodgy. And my friend had set up in like the front living room like a sleeping bag, and then his other friend, my other friend, had a sleeping bag and stuff as well set up. And it's so crazy. So that night, I decided to stay with my good friend because he was not, you know, not doing great with the whole like suddenly being homeless. And yeah, he was a you know, prominent dude in our little community, local peer group. And just not, he was a pretty popular dude as well. And so there's some image stuff with that as well. And he was struggling. So I was like, man, you know what? I'll stay here tonight.
Right.
Like, oh, it's the first night, man. I got you. I'll stay here. And so that night, oh, man. Everything was about to change. Like, it was a crazy day. And I talked to him about meeting with the girl and just like like all the realizations that I had been coming to. And we stayed up pretty late talking. I remember that was just like, yeah, dude, everything is about to change. Like, this is finally, this is the moment where everything changes. And we fall asleep and wake up 6 in the morning to goosh, 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 goosh. This is the Medford police. Get your fucking hands up.
Oh boy.
Shoot my eyes open. I'm like, am I dreaming? Is one of our friends like messing with us? What's going on? And then, get your fucking hands up. And I turn around and look, like laying on the ground in the front living room, and turn around and look, and there's two cops in the doorway, with their guns pointed at us. And
Wow.
then outside through the window, another cop with his gun pointed at us. And they're just screaming at us for us to get up and put our hands up. And it's like 5 something, 6 in the morning. Yeah, so they cuffed us and searched the
You
house and
did not resist.
no. I mean,
Smart.
they illegally entered from the start. They a neighbor had called and said that some homeless people, some transients, were in this foreclosed house. And so they took that as truth, which they were wrong. And so they broke the law because they didn't think it mattered, to where, like, in actuality, we had the keys to the house, permission to stay there, and the door was closed. And, legal wise, there's a lot of stuff that they just really did wrong, which, I mean, that was the Almighty as well. This whole story ends up pretty cool, but yeah, they searched the house, and to afford getting somewhere to stay, my friend Corey had gotten a bunch of weed, and it was all hanging drying in this back closet.
Oh
And it was
no.
like a couple pounds. Like, it wasn't, depending on who you are, that's a lot or nothing. Yeah, so they found that, and they come back up, and the whole thing is ridiculous. They were so over the top about everything, stacking up, clearing the house like we were some kind of insurgency group or something. Yeah, so then they came back out, and they took our stories, and our stories matched. And I wasn't gonna, not gonna not try to be the reason that crap goes down. Like, I'm not gonna sell my buddy out. And so, like, I told my story, and then Corey told his, and then they called the people. So yeah, it was two young dudes that were Corey's friends and kind of my friends as well. And one of them, whose girlfriend had given us the key, because they're already up in Corvallis going back to college. So they called the girlfriend. It's confirmed that we were given the key. They called the boyfriend who had lived there, and the story checks up. They called the other friend whose parents own the house, and the story checks up. They call the parents who own the house, and this is like my friend's lifelong friends, like lifelong friends. Like, he grew up in this house, basically. And the police tell them about the weed that they found, and they instantly say, We don't care if our son or the other gave them permission, cite them for trespassing. So then they call the son back and they tell him that what his parents said. And he says, "It doesn't surprise me that blank, my friend who's with me, it doesn't surprise me that blank got caught with this. He has a long history of drug use," which is not true. But as soon as that was said, we were picked up and carried out to the patrol cars and were taken to jail.
So let me recap
And
this. In the span of a couple of days, you get back in contact with this girl, you get back in contact with your parents, everything's going spiffy, and
life
then
is
you
about to
end up in
change.
jail. Yeah.
Go to bed knowing that life is about to change, and then waking up to life changing in the exact opposite way I thought it would. Yeah.
So you're in jail and
So,
you get to overthink your sins.
well, the jail, see, my jail story is pretty freaking nuts as well, though. It was eventful. I, like, with all this stuff, I'm a very symbolic dude and imaginative, and yeah, I'm aware of certain things, and so I can, I feel like it's my opinion that the Almighty speaks to me in a way that I can hear. And this story is definitely a testament to that, in my opinion. But so we get taken in, and it's a jail. So there's the tanks down below, and we get put in a tank. And I've never been to jail. I've never been arrested. Like did a bunch of bad crap in those days, but I'd never got caught for anything. Like I was about my stuff to where, I was making sure that that never happened. But so I don't even know what I'm getting charged with. I'm trying to ask the dude. We finally get to the jailhouse, and he's like, "You're being charged with a class A or yeah, class A manufacturing of a controlled substance of a large amount within a school zone, and then another class A of distributing a controlled substance of a large amount within a school zone, and then a class B trespassing, and oh, class B possession of a controlled substance, substantial amount within a school zone, and then a misdemeanor trespassing as well. So it was game over. Two class A felonies for something I didn't do. It was I wasn't getting a job ever again. I wasn't going to be allowed to do much. And it was made pretty clear pretty quickly that we were examples for the rest of the youth.
Makes
Like
sense.
that was what the attempt was. But yeah, so in the main cell, we're held in there for a couple hours, and then we get processed and put into smaller tanks. And my friend gets processed first, and he gets put into the small holding tank, and then I get processed. And he brings me the sheriff brings me up to one tank, and there's just this guy standing, don't know, drugged out of his mind, but standing at the little window of the door of the cell, filling it with his face with just the craziest smile ever. And I'm just like, I look at the sheriff, I'm like, "Dude, you can't put me in here. Like, I've never been to jail before. You can't do this to me. Like, please." And he's like, it's full anyways, so we'll put you in the next one." And that one was, there's two other people that were supposed to be in there, but they were in court, and so I got to be in there for a loan. But at that point, I couldn't see the clock anymore, and so that was a pretty strange thing. You close your eyes and kind of pass out for a minute, and you don't know if it's been literally a minute or if it's been 8 hours or, like what. So you're just kind of in this limbo, and I'm still freaking out. Like, I don't know if we're getting charged. I don't know like what's going on. I've never been through any of this before. Then the two guys come back from their trial, and one guy's just like drunk out of his mind and just instantly kind of slops over to his bed and passes out. But the other dude was just methed out to the max. And he starts yelling about not getting his phone call and how like stuff with his grandma and how he's gonna kill everyone and like all this stuff. And I'm just sitting there like as he's talking, yelling at these guards, I'm like, yeah, man, totally. Like that, I'm trying to like trying to survive this ordeal, so I'm trying to get on his good side.
Don't be a threat.
Like, I
Don't be a
totally
threat.
feel
Yeah.
you. And so, yeah, I mean, people are telling us that what we're probably going to get, own recognized by the end of the day. This isn't a big deal compared to everyone else. And then they finally, like, that night rolls around, and so they finally put us all in that main big tank again, which was strange. And then they decided to bring us all up to the dorms, which, yeah, that sucked. So we get in this elevator. There's like 12 of us, or maybe 8 of us. And you get in this elevator, and like the lights shut off, and like there's like a red light or something. And then you go up, or it just like dims. And then you go up and you enter the jail, the big jail part. And in Medford, there's like, it's dorms for the most part. So it's like 40 person dorms. And they all have like glass fronts. And there's like 7 stories, maybe 6 stories, yeah, maybe less than that, but there's at least 5 stories of these, glass fronted walls. And as soon as the elevator opens and we walk out and we have to step up and line up before we continue walking, every person in the jail comes up to the windows. And once again, I've never been to jail before. I've never done all of any of this stuff. I'm freaking out. I don't even know what's going to happen at all. And you got people, you got the crazies going, rah, rah, kind of showing their crazy. And then you got, which was more for me, a little more frightening, is you got people, 2 people next to each other leaning in and whispering and pointing at people and assessing this group that I'm in. And then we walk all the way around, and we walk all the way up all the floors around the whole thing to the very top, to the dorm that we were going to be in. So the whole time I'm just like, this is all happening around me. And just like terrifying me more and more. So we get into the dorm, and I'm standing behind my friend who is African American. And we, so you walk into the dorm, and the dorm is like a big rectangular room in front of you, and then 2 square dorms in the back, open, so it's like 2 rectangles basically. And so I walk into the straight ahead dorm, and behind Corey, behind my friend, and end up this other African American guy comes up, and he's like, yo, get to the other side, white boy. And it was like clicked of like, oh, like this is, it's actually like this. Like that's, this is like that's how this goes here. And And I was just like, yep, totally. And like just turned around and went to the other side.
What else are you gonna do?
And then there's no beds available on the other side. I'm like, well, crap. But everyone had been saying like, you're gonna be let out tonight. Like they're not gonna keep you overnight. And if they do, they're gonna release you in the morning. And so this guy jumps down, sees me kind of like in the middle, looking around, lost. And he jumps down and he's like, I don't, if you've ever seen The Longest Yard, there's the guy that is kind of working on both sides, and he's the guy with the beard that gets the information. He's kind of a rat.
I haven't seen it, but
There's a,
okay.
oh, word. Well, there's this guy that's him who jumps down. And he's like, "Hey, man, like, what's going on? Like, what do you need? What can I do for you, man?" And I'm just like, "Oh, they told me to get onto this side." But there's no beds available. And he's like, "Oh, let me figure it out, man. Let me figure it out." And he goes off and he ends up, actually it was a dude that I had spent the day with, in the tank below. But this young Mexican guy, he kicked him out to the other side and, gave me that bed. And, I thanked him and stuff. And he's like, "Oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry." Knowing that he probably wanted my desserts or, something. And so I get up in my bunk and then I look over, and the dude that told me to get to the other side is laying in the bunk next to me. I'm like, wait, what? And then like I look around, there's a couple other African American guys, and I'm like, okay, now I'm confused. And I go back over and look. And the other side is it's Hispanic, and so there's the it's a little different in Southern Oregon, I guess, in that way. And so the division is, Hispanic and black and white instead of, more cliched stuff, I guess.
Right.
But and my friend is a little more light skinned. And so that's why they had him over there. But it, or why they accepted him over there, I guess. Yeah, then, God, spent the next, that day and the following day, in there. I didn't think anyone knew about it outside in the outside world, and so like I was under this illusion that like I could get out and no one would ever know about this, and I could handle it and I could deal with this. And then on the second day we had our like hearing or our arraignment trial, and my friend and I both were not allowed to leave. We didn't get our own recognizance, because they wanted to make an example out of us. So we had to stay in jail for a month or so
Wow.
until our trial. And yeah, that started to do something not good in me, in both of us, of like, okay, I guess I have to change who I am to make it in here, if I'm gonna survive in this. And it's not prison, so it's I don't know if I could survive prison, but so it's a little less extreme, but still there's a lot of crap.
Yeah, there's a hierarchy in games and
Yeah, oh yeah, totally. With so when I first walked into the dorm, you could instantly see on either dorm, the two sides, you could see a white dude that looked like the leader, the way that he was talking to people and that people were talking to him. It just seemed that way. And then on the right side, there was another guy, a Hispanic guy, who also seemed like the leader, and because of the same reasons. And that was like instantly apparent to me. As soon as we walked in, I saw that. So then the white guy, it turns out he was the house mouse, which sounds, I don't know if you don't know what that means. It's like someone who has a very long sentence is the dorm leader, that they make sure that everything stays clean, everyone is acts appropriately and doesn't get in trouble and stuff. And every day that they do this work, they get like an hour off of their sentence or something like that. And so he was the house mouse, and so he had also like gave a Bible study that first night, which was interesting. It was a very interesting experience, but also just crazy. But after just a sec. Yeah, I'm not gonna tell that part. There's so basically I'd gotten into something that I couldn't get myself out of, and decided to call my parents to whatever, say sorry and try to figure something out.
And they knew where you
And try
were, right?
No. I
They didn't
mean,
know.
that's at this point, like, I reckon that this is super low key, and because it wasn't like out in the public, or it happened at like 6 in the morning. So like it shouldn't necessarily be common knowledge to anyone. So I try to call my dad, and he doesn't answer. So I use my one phone call. And I'm like, well, crap. All right. And then someone shows me like a way to type a certain code, and you get another free phone call. And so I use that to call my mom. So I call my mom, and she answers, and she's crying. First of all, if you get called from the jail, and you answer it starts with this like prompt of like, this is the Jackson County Jail. Caleb Heidegger is
Oh
trying to
boy.
reach you. Like, do you accept this call? So there's that, but she's already like crying, and it's like, are you okay? And so I'm like, oh, they somehow know. And I'm, very emotional at this point. I don't know what's going on at all. I'm very lost and, alone in a way. She lets me know that, well, first that my cousin Danny had seen, one of my friends had posted my mugshot. There's a Medford Mugshots is a website, and they had posted my mugshot on Twitter, like making a joke about it. And so it made its way around. Then she told me that it was her birthday.
Oh man.
And man, that super, super affected me.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like, world's shittiest son kind of thing. Like, happy birthday. And she let me know that my father and a family friend who was a lawyer were paying the bail, and that my grandpa was willing to pay the bail for me. And so, yeah, that night, and I could go into more detail. There's a lot more with the story, but that night, I finally got out and sat downtown wearing, because I mean, we got picked up when we were, in the morning. We just woke up, and so I'm wearing a jersey and sweatpants. I have no shoes. I have no nothing. and I'm just sitting downtown, looking like a crackhead, like looking like the kind. And I know it. I can see it. And I'm just like waiting for my dad to drive up. And so earlier, one of the early points in this, I had said that I had built this ideology of like, they'll never understand. You remember that? Like, mm-hmm. my family will never understand if they knew this about me. They would never forgive me or like be able to forgive me even. Like, they just wouldn't get it. And yeah, if they knew, they would hate me. And so that's finally come about, or is you know what I mean? Like that veil has finally been torn away. There's no more disguise
you basically had nothing to hide behind anymore.
Yeah. And so I'm waiting for my dad to show up downtown, and I'm dreading it. And I'm, you know, just trying to figure myself out. And he rolls up, and I get in. And I, you know, like, I was expecting this, just like, how big of an idiot are you? Like, are you happy now? Like, have you had fun? And, you know, mm-hmm. like, all of that kind of stuff. Like, you are a fool. And all he said was, are you okay? And that kind of got me. And I, you know, said like, yeah. And he's like, good. Like, I love you so much. And I'm so glad you're okay.
Kind of reminds you of that parable, doesn't it?
It was 4 years. For years, I lived in this identity of like, no, why wouldn't they hate me if they found this stuff out? Like, yeah, like it makes sense. So like, this is what's going to happen if they do find out. And in a moment, he tore that to the ground. And especially for him specifically to be the one to do that, because he was the one specifically that I knew would not understand and would hate me. And he just proved me completely wrong. And then we went home, and my brothers had come over, I think with their wives, and everyone was just like crying and like, I love you. Like, I'm so glad you're okay. And I had never, like I said, I grew up in the church and stuff, but I had never experienced the unconditional love of the Almighty before that. And it changed everything. Like it woke me up to so much, and it shook me out of so much. And it's a collective thing as well, though. Like the specificness of like the whole event. Like, that's what I mean by the way that God speaks to us is the way that we can hear. Because it's a similar thing to later with my testimony, but with this, it's like, you know, with the dream girl coming in and creating this reminder of like, life's about to change, or like, I need to change my life, and like organically creating the beginnings of this, and then knowing that I probably wouldn't follow through on it. There's this smackdown experience to force it about. And then it's smoothed over in the end by the unconditional love of my family. and it didn't bring me back to a faith, but it brought me to a, it showed me just my foolishness, like how selfish I was living, how dumb I was, just naive about how the world works, and yeah, with my art as well, like music or anything, like I was just, kind of had the romantic idea of like, oh, it'll just happen one day, like soon, like someone's gonna hear the song and it'll just happen. Like I don't need to like work super hard at this. Like it's, I got it. And it was just like not true at all. Like my music was not good. And even if it was good, like that's not how it works. Like that's not how it happens. Yeah, it got me out of a lot of foolishness and allowed me
But it took some
to
serious
return.
things, man.
Oh, frick yeah. But it allowed me to re get back on that seeking of truth. And it took a year from that point to, or a little less than a year, but to get back on that seeking of truth, but it freed me up. I'd thrown in so many distractions and like detrimental, life sucking things that I couldn't. I didn't want to. I didn't have the time to. I didn't have the ability, the mental capability to, because I was just in such a ignorant fog, I guess.
Yeah, you don't see that if you're in the fog.
Like it was, and that's why, like that the day before I got arrested with seeing her, it was such a like cleared of years of fog. It was finally like, oh, like this is, like I still love her so much and have through these years. And so I can't, if that's actually important to me, if I actually love her, this stuff doesn't matter. Like, and it's wrong. Like she's right about these things. And so I have to switch stuff up, like that was the initial,
His wake-up call.
It wasn't a pleasant process.
Yeah, but change for ch realizing that you need to change is never going to be pleasant. It's always going to be painful because, well, I got to get off my ass and do something. I
Totally.
think there's loads more in there. Because I don't think we've covered. How old are you right now?
26.
At the time of the story, like you were a free man. How old were you?
19.
So you were,
19 or 20. Maybe 20.
we're an hour and a half in. So I'd love to hear the rest, but it's got to be another time.
That's why I said that. That's what I was saying earlier with like the love story and the, there's too many stories to, it's easy for me to talk for
Yeah.
many 20 hours, so.
And so far I cannot connect it to being with us reading C.S. Lewis on grief. So I would like to
Yeah.
hear the part that gets there, but it will have to be another time.
Word.
Anything else you want to get in the last couple of minutes, or shall I stop recording?
I guess we can, I don't know, we can call it good for there for now.
All right, I'll stop recording now.